Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But you can always stay up to date if you're away from the radio dial by listening on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen, stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is, of course, the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Whew. We got a busy day.
What a couple of hours it has been. My company, as he is every Tuesday and Friday on the program, he's the host of VSiN Primetime. Also, on the weekends, VSiN's Betting Tailgate Show, VSiN's College Football, College Basketball Betting Podcast. Download the VSiN Watch app on Twitter, on X, although I'm being told it's down, is at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
What's going on in Memphis? Anything breaking? Any news? Anything noteworthy?
So I think this is probably the best way to go about it. So if you're just joining us, you have no idea. Maybe the X app is down, so you haven't followed along. The breaking news of the day is that the Memphis Grizzlies have fired Taylor Jenkins. And so I kind of think the best way to go about it is I think you should ask me the obvious questions, and that way we can see if we can work through it. Because I've been smoking some phone lines. I think I've got a pretty good sense of what happened. But you're also, you know, you also have to recognize when a decision like this is made is we are going to get into the tell your story portion of this. And so I think this is what is true, because I actually had started last Thursday's program. This was right after the Grizzlies had just gotten beat by Portland in an, honestly, Tim, one of the sorriest efforts you've seen all year. Like, it was just a pathetic effort. And I told George, I don't know when, but he's done. Like, they quit. And that's the first time that I realized, like, okay, this is over. Now, did I think he would get fired 8 days later? No, I kind of thought he'd make it to the, I thought he would make it to the end of the season. But here we are. So I think the best way to go about it is I think you should ask me the questions that that come to mind for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, once again, this is one of those instances where being the guy that doesn't live in Memphis is when you see this news come across for a team that's 44-29. And now it is worth noting, what was it, 2 weeks ago? We asked the question, at what point do you start to panic a little bit?
Yeah,
was it the Tuesday show after the Sacramento loss?
I think that's right, because the Sacramento game, like the Sacramento game is the game right before the Portland game that I was referencing, and that was not a great effort either. Like that, it was at times, like, they showed a little bit more fight in that game, and obviously Sacramento's a better team than Portland, but it was the same problems there. Like, you could just tell guys had checked out. Effort has been a problem for this team. I don't know, George. Realistically, I think, honestly, you could make the argument before the All-Star break.
Yeah, that's That's probably a good point, and I wouldn't say too much earlier before the All-Star break. You could probably say about maybe a week, so a handful of games there.
Yeah.
But since the All-Star break, effort has certainly come into question, as well as, which these questions have been there all year, but it's really been more glaring due to injury, has been
rotation,
utilization.
Roles, yeah.
The roster itself, nudge, nudge, GM.
Yep. So. No, I do think, I think it's also fair to say this, Tim. The Grizzlies have not done a good job making the team better around Ja, Jaren, and Dez. And, like, this is kind of the natural progression of what you see with the NBA. Okay, the GM, who has done a good job, he's not going first. The coach is going to go first. And to your point, if you just look at the record and you say, well, they're fifth in the West, I think they've now hit their win total, hit the over. If you're just from 40,000 feet looking at it, going like, why did they do this? It's one of those things where it's like, if you haven't been watching them, I don't want to take up for the organization, because I still think this is in the same vein as once upon a time, the Grizzlies sent J.B. Bickerstaff and Chris Wallace out on exit interview day to do all of the media, and right when media day ends, they fired him, which I still think is one of the most cowardly chicken-esque things I've ever seen. This is not as bad as that, but it's kind of, it rhymes with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes, yeah, I think that makes some sense. So why now? Why on the heels of a showdown against the Lakers, where the Lakers currently have an identical record to the Grizzlies, with implications of getting home court on the line?
Yes.
You've got Boston coming to town on Monday. I mean, the three-game stretch here for the Grizzlies over the next, starting tomorrow, three games in four nights, Lakers, Celtics, Warriors. Celtics are arguably the best team in the NBA. I still think it's the Thunder, but whatever. You can make the argument from a, you know, they're the defending champs.
I think it's fair to say this. The Celtics, they're not the Vegas favorite, but they are the betting favorite.
From a power rating standpoint, I think you could probably, yeah, I think you could make an argument that they are.
I think they have the shortest odds of most futures I've seen to win the title. I think they have the shortest odds.
And then you've got Golden State, who is struggling a little bit, but still in that same ballpark of trying to avoid the play-in tournament.
Yep.
There are three games. I think they're 2.5 games back of the Grizz. 2.5, three, whatever.
I think it's 2.5 right now, yeah.
Okay. So you've got a massive stretch here. Does this decision change the mindset of the team? Does it, you know, do you get that fired coach bump here if you're the Grizzlies?
I think that is the gamble that they're hoping for. And again, I have no idea if it's right or wrong, but what has been very obvious the last few weeks is that this team has quit on Taylor. Now, does that mean you fire Taylor and you bring in Tomas Iasola and all of a sudden everything's fixed? No, but I think the gamble is they are trying to avoid, as you just mentioned, the standings. They're trying to avoid the scenario where the bottom absolutely falls out and they wind up in the play-in. This is at least an organizational effort to stop the bleeding. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you think it works? Do you think this was the prudent move on March 28th to fire your head coach in the midst of, as you pointed out, a team that has, in the eyes of odds makers, exceeded expectations this year?
I'm okay with it. I think there's kind of an element of when it's over, and it has felt over. And so Do I think that this is a move, like we're going to see the Grizzlies go rip off 9 of 10, that they're going to win these next four games? Well, no, because I think the bigger issue right now is the roster's not great beyond Ja, Jaren, and Dez. And further, Ja's played 41 games this year, or I think 40 and change. And so there's the school of thought that maybe by getting rid of Taylor, Ja comes back and pushes it harder. I don't know if that's necessary. I'll say this. The timing is the type of decision where you immediately think something must have happened.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Did something else happen? Or is this because you guys would be more aware? I think the overall thought from 50,000 feet is, what the hell happened? Like, there's something more. Do you think that to be true? Or do you think, knowing what you know about this Grizzlies team, that this was just the time that they felt like they needed to make this move?
I do not, as of today, I do not think something happened. Like, do I think, like, because there was a strange comment from Taylor last night post-game in which he kind of unsolicitedly offered up an injury update on Ja. Like, it wasn't really brought up. And so at the time, I'm thinking, man, that's kind of weird. Like, I don't know. Is that like a threat to like be like, I think Ja should be playing and he's not? And like, was that? So I immediately went there. But after having talked to people, that's not what I get. What I get is that there was an atmosphere of chaos. There was an atmosphere of toxicity. There's the atmosphere of which the players have just decided that they're out on him and that this decision isn't really about one thing. It's more trying to save the season.
So now, what's next?
So, I suspect, because I had kind of hypothesized this, I don't know, a couple months ago. Do I think Taylor Jenkins was going to be the coach that was going to get the most out of this team? No, I don't. Because in the end, whether or not it was Taylor's fault, whether or not it was Ja's fault, there's not the appropriate being able to get in his face, whatnot. Like, the Grizzlies, I think, at times had enabled Ja, and it allowed things to spiral. But I kind of think they need someone that can kind of give it to Ja. And Mike Brown, to me, makes sense. But that also brings up a couple of questions. Number one, does Mike Brown want it? My suspicion's probably, because Mike's not coaching. And in the end, the Grizzlies can offer him a roster of Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., Desmond Bane, and others. I think mainly that would be the big three. And I would imagine to a certain degree, Mike Brown wants to stick it to the Kings. Well, you're in the same conference. But do I trust that the Grizzlies, A, are going to pay to get that done? Not necessarily. And organizationally, the Grizzlies don't really like having the alpha coach. It's more of coach that's in line with what they're doing, with their organizational vision. And if I'm Mike Brown, I'm not really looking for, like, I want to coach the team. And so I think it makes sense. But if you made me bet, we're going to be looking for another version of Taylor Jenkins. Like, the Grizzlies are going to hire some other up-and-coming assistant, and that will be that.
So my question to you and Grizzly fans right now, it's 40, you're 9 games away from starting the playoffs. This is a playoff team. I guess if things completely fell out the bottom, you'd be in the play-in tournament. But right now, it seems like you're going to avoid the play-in, and there's a chance that you're having home court advantage in the first round. What do you want now? Do you want it to just, all right, we're going to roll with the interim here? I mean, they're not going to. It's unlikely that a Doc Rivers situation is going to happen, but you just mentioned Mike Brown. Like, what do Grizzly fans want right now?
Them to play better. You know what I mean? Like I don't really think.
Is this a situation where the collective Grizzly fan is like, as long as this move helps us play better and we are able to win a playoff series, we're good with it? Because once again, Twitter is an interesting place, but you know, you look at like StatMuse, for instance. Taylor Jenkins, most wins ever by Grizzlies coach.
Yes.
Top three in wins since becoming coach. Top three defense since becoming coach. Fired, period.
Correct. Now, their defense had fallen off a cliff this year. Like, that is true. And I think when you ask most Grizzlies fans, it was just the type of thing where I don't really know, like, what Taylor Jenkins' hallmark as a coach was. I don't know if he's particularly a scheme guy. I'm not saying that he's not good with scheme, but like that wasn't what he was billed as. But what was always apparent about his teams is that they always played hard. Maybe he didn't push all the right buttons, make all the right calls, but for the most part, you knew the Grizzlies were going to show up night in, night out, even when they had a barely G League team last year on the floor. And this year, what has caused fans just the utter frustration is they're watching the Grizzlies night after night, and you're just seeing a team that is putting forth no effort. Like, it's not even. There had been kind of this straw man argument out there that somehow Grizzlies fans had decided it was championship or bust. And I don't honestly know anyone that thinks like that and thought like that coming into the season. But what was driving people insane is, night after night, you're watching this team, and they're giving up 70-point halves. They're making terrible passes, like these horrific turnovers that are just leading to dunks, and you're watching them just walk back on the floor. And so when what most fans want is they just kind of want to see the team play better, but do I really trust that, like, Tomas Iasola is the answer at head coach? Like, part of the reason is, like, I kind of wish they would have waited till the end of the season, simply because I always think one of the most dangerous things in sports is you give the interim and he gets a chance to get the gig.
Well, it's like Rodney Terry with Texas,
yeah.
Right?
And
we all kind of knew that was not the right decision at the time, but they make the run to the Elite Eight?
They made, right? Yeah, Miami beat them in the Elite Eight.
And then they're like, well, we got to hire him now. And now here we are. And they fired their coach. And Sean Miller's now the head coach there. I don't know if that's an apples to apples.
No, but it's exactly what I'm saying, what I fear. Like, what if in this nine games, they overachieve, they win a first round playoff series, they're competitive in the second round, and then maybe they just bow out? Like, I worry that. Like, I don't think that's what they need. I think what they need is someone that can actually come in with some gravitas. And I think Tomas is a highly accomplished basketball coach, and I think he knows what he's talking about and what he's doing. I don't know if that's what they need.
That's where I'm with you 100% is all the reading and listening and seeing I've done in the span of, okay, cool, he is actually the interim head coach now. He last season put together one of the most efficient and just high-powered offenses in the world. He won the EuroLeague, won the EuroLeague Coach of the Year for good reason. He's won everywhere that he's gone, and he's clearly accomplished in that, but I don't see him as the coach who's going to go in there, walk in there into the locker room and MF somebody if they are deserving of an MF, you know?
I do think over right now, I think that building's kind of Westeros after Robert Baratheon's died. I think there were a lot of people. I think there's been a lot of backstabbing. I think there's a lot of poisoning, and I think there was a lot of people kind of jockeying for position. And I think it kind of shows. Like, when you look at it, it looks like an organization that is just, like, in a free fall. Like, does this stabilize that? Maybe, like, but it it also kind of feels like maybe a sugar high in that maybe it's a short-term solution, but I don't think it solves the long-term issue. And the long-term issue to me is you need someone. I think you need someone that Ja Morant respects and someone that's going to push Ja Morant. I don't think that's Tomas.
So bring it to the immediate. Do you think you see a bump from this team after a pretty rough five-game road trip?
I mean, it was as close to a disaster. I mean, they beat Utah. That was the only thing keeping it from being five alarm fire. But it was as bad of a road trip as you could have had. Yes.
And this team, as we've talked about on this show, and I'm sure you've talked about it more in the days that I haven't been here, the stat that is the glaring one is their struggles against teams that are good, right?
Yes.
And this next stretch, you've got three teams that are good.
And two teams that you're fighting with.
Right. You've got the Lakers, you've got an identical record with. You've got Golden State, who's behind you now in the playoffs and currently in the play-in. And then you've got, once again, probably the best team pound for pound in the NBA, at least from a power rating standpoint.
So, can we see an interim bump? Maybe, because I do think effort's probably going to be up, just because it's like, it's interesting, because I was talking with somebody afterwards, and somebody not with the organization, and we were talking about, you know, you could actually make a case that social media plays a role in this. And before everyone starts rolling their eyes, listen to my argument. It's not in the sense that I think Taylor Jenkins, because Taylor Jenkins was wildly unpopular on Twitter. But I think by and large, the average fan, I would say, felt positive. Not like strongly, like he's not beloved, but I think everybody kind of was like, I think he's a pretty good coach. Like,
this is an agree, not a strongly agree.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, if you're doing the, he's not getting the five, but most people are. He was clearly going to be, at worst, you were indifferent to him, and most people were probably like, I think he's a pretty good coach. I think that's how.
I still think he's a good coach.
Yeah, I think he'll get hired.
Absolutely.
So
I think he'll get a job.
So what I do think, how I do think social media played a role in this is I think players and those involved with the team, they're on social media, and I think the conversation around it, if you want to say, you know, poisoned the water, fine, but it certainly brought ideas to them that seemed to catch on recently. Because it's very obvious to me, like, Ja Morant's gone through injuries this year. I mean, I've pointed this out. Like, he dislocated his hip. It was an injury that when you had the Twitter doctors on, they're all saying, like, you don't see this in basketball. This happens in football, and it usually requires surgery. So I'm not saying this is a nothing burger. He dislocates his hip. He's recovering from labrum surgery, and he sprains his AC joint on the same shoulder. He's clearly banged up on top of that, and now you throw in a hammy. But since, you know, and I don't know if it's maybe because the league has quote-unquote forgotten about him, whatnot, he was very mopey this year. And there was times, like, you just would see him not get back on defense. And, like, I don't think it was going well. Do I think Ja Morant is the sole reason why Taylor Jenkins was fired? No. I don't think it helped. And I also say this, like, if you want to connect some dots, like, the only time Kleiman, other than the trade deadline, which he has to speak, and opening whatever we call it, media day.
Yeah.
The only real public comment he's given this year was after the rumors about Ja getting traded. He came out and gave that really strong, emphatic, Ja will not be traded. Like, it's a fantasy, all that. And he makes this decision. And I think if Ja was convinced that Taylor Jenkins was the right guy, I think he'd still probably be here. But do I think he's the sole reason they got fired? No, I think really the fact that they have looked so terrible these last few weeks, and they've made frustrating rotation decisions, the guys in and out of the lineup, like, you know, I was thinking about this before the Utah game. So Taylor does like the coach's interview right before the game starts on the pregame show, and he just announces out of nowhere, like, we know Zach Edey has struggled, but like out of nowhere, well, now the answer's Jay Huff. Well, Jay Huff has the same struggle Zach does, which is defense. And it just felt like even as you're approaching game 71, or now I guess 73, they were still like searching for the answers when you should be preparing for the playoffs. Like, you should be shortening the roster. You should be seeing the guys that you're depending on. And it felt like they were still just like trying to figure it out because they had no answers. I think that, like, I think all of that is a bigger reason for why he got fired than Ja.
I don't disagree at all. And to also answer part of Tim's question about whether we think that we're going to see a bit of a bump, I don't necessarily know if we're going to see the interim bump, but I do think we're going to see a couple things that are very different, because at this point, now that he kind of has the title, the interim head coach, from what we've heard from other media people here, is that Isalo really wants to run a lot of more similar what he ran back in Paris.
More pick and roll, more stuff.
High pick and roll, heavy passing based off of the initial pick, things like that. And he hasn't been able to do it just because they were doing it, I guess, offense by committee.
Yeah, so the prevailing narrative right now, Tim, is that because the offense has been a problem.
Please correct me if I'm wrong there, by the way.
No. So this is the... This will be the narrative. The narrative will be Taylor took like a little of Noah's ideas, another assistant they brought in that doesn't believe in a ball screen, which bold in the NBA, because God knows you don't need spacing or any separation. And Tomas with the more international style, which is pick and roll and whatnot. And that Taylor basically like blended it up, and it just kind of became an offense without an identity. And so, I mean, the biggest bump will be, and I don't know if this is true, but like, if Ja just starts playing,
well, pretty big bump.
That's a bump. I mean, like, hello? He's played 41 games. They're 28-13 with him. And without him, now I think they're like 16. So they're 28-13. What are they overall? 44? 44-29. So that'd be 14-16 without him? Yeah. So like, if all of a sudden Ja's hammy gets better, well, yeah, that's a bump. But how much of that is a result of Tomas's coaching? Like, because that's kind of the other thing. It's not like he can really just come in and install a brand new offense. Like, they're gonna have to at least run stuff that they know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's, you can't just come in and just say, like, all of a sudden, all right, forget all the offense that we spent all of training camp the whole season, and here's a brand new offense. Like, I don't know if that's gonna work. So like, you kind of have to like piecemeal it. Like, okay, what's going to work? But I don't know. Like, I think Ja's hamstring is hurt.
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen it. Again, like you said, he's been dealing with these hip injuries, these lower body injuries, which to me, a dislocated hip, we've seen it in football. It normally takes.
It ended Brian Fitzpatrick's career.
How long was Tua out with that when he had to have that surgery? Quite a while.
The problem is trying to remember all of Tua's injuries.
Well, fair. But you know what I mean?
In the non-concussion ones, it's like, all right, we've had hip, we've had like tightrope, ankle. Yeah, I mean,
But that's not, like you said, that's not a nothing burger. That's a pretty major potential injury.
The problem with a hamstring is, I think the other two injuries, for the most part, it's fair to say most of the issue was going to be pain tolerance.
Yeah.
The problem with a hamstring is, that's not the concern. The concern is you go out there and you rip it.
Oh, then you're
right, and
you're cooked.
And I think most, you know, most sports medicine people would tell you hamstrings are one of the trickiest of all the tendons because there's not like a blueprint. Like your hamstring might heal in 2 weeks. I might take 2 weeks off and it's not any better. And I do think the original plan is like we have to manage this as much as possible so that he is as healthy as he can be getting into the playoffs. Because if he's not healthy, it doesn't matter anyway. All this discussion's academic. But, you know, what if we find out that Taylor's fired and all of a sudden tomorrow night, Ja's moved from doubtful to he's off the injury report and he comes out and he has an awesome game. Well, then, all of a sudden, maybe you think a little differently about this team coming into the playoffs. I think that's pie in the sky because I just don't really believe Ja is milking it or silently protesting. You know, is any of this making sense?
Yeah. So I guess the net of it for me is, and we don't know the answer, we won't know the answer for the next couple of weeks. Do you think they had to make this move now? Because if I'm gathering what you say is right, it's they're not making this move to appease Ja.
Yes.
But to your point, Ja clearly isn't, knowing what we know, saying, don't do this. That's my guy.
And it's also, this is a little more, no one, the average fan wouldn't know. The Grizzlies coming into the season fired all of their assistants. And one of the assistants, Blake Ahern, was basically Ja's personal coach. And Ja had a very good relationship with him, and he is not here anymore. And, you know, it's sometimes it's like, you know, when the quarterback has the quarterback coach or the coordinator, like they get rid of him to save the head coach, like it doesn't work out. Do I think it was the right move today? I think it's short-sighted. I also don't have a problem with it. Because I think the biggest reason I don't have a problem with it is they've looked so bad, Tim. And it's not just, like, you know when you're seeing a team just go through the malaise of this is, you know, it's an 82-game season. Everybody's got ups and downs. Like, Tim, they just don't care. Like, there's no competitive spirit. Like, so something had to change. I do wonder a little bit how it's perceived throughout the league. Because, I mean, this is, it's kind of like when, you know, when you fire, in college football, you fire your coach who went 8-4 because you think it's not good enough, and the rest of the coaching community goes, what did they expect?
Right.
Like, we think the guy did a good job.
Bo Pelini at Nebraska.
100%. Because everybody knows, like, the people, even, think about this. Bo is a known a-hole.
Correct.
And even coaches took up for him. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's because I think coaches realized, hey, Nebraska, it's kind of what you are.
Yeah.
Like, how?
Nine wins isn't so bad, huh?
Correct. I mean, they just celebrated the Pinstripe Bowl. And listen, I think Matt Rhule's a very good coach. But, like, what, we're now 14 years removed from that? So, if they play out the season and they quietly exit, am I all that offended? Like, I'm fine with just saying shake it up. Do I think I would have pulled the trigger? I guess I got to give him some credit. I think it's gutsy because it's clearly unconventional. I mean, has there ever been a team in the NBA that fired their coach with less than a month remaining without scandal or whatever, you know, just, I believe this to be performance-based. That's in the playoffs? Giannotto pointed out the only example he could think of was when Michigan actually won their national title with Glenn Rice. Who was the coach they had? Michigan found out that he was leaving.
Yeah, Steve Fisher took
and
over.
Steve Fisher got the interim title. Steve Fisher gets the ring. They win the championship. But it was whoever, like, they fired him with, like right before the tournament.
And there are some people saying that maybe Maryland should have done that before, prior to last night's game.
We will talk about that in the list, but let's take a break. We got tonight's games. We got a big one. Kentucky, Tennessee. You can hear that right here on 92.9 FM ESPN, but let's talk about it with Blake Topmeyer. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM ESPN. Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. You can always check out his podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered. Episodes available each and every week on Twitter, on X, at B Topmeyer. Blake, who is tonight bigger for, Tennessee or Kentucky?
I think Tennessee. I think, you know, Tennessee's still charging for the first Final Four in program history. I mean, by Kentucky standards, at least the expectation that program's held to, and historically, like, they're going to have more cracks at this, right? And under Rick Barnes, Tennessee's had repeated cracks, but still, when you haven't been to a Final Four, you don't want to squander any of these opportunities. And also, you know, first year and Mark, with Mark Pope, like, I think if he bows out in the Sweet 16, you know, nobody's going to hang a banner for that, but nobody's going to run him out of town after year one either. So, you know, whereas if Tennessee bows out, it's going to be kind of more of the same for Rick Barnes, which is not necessarily bad. I mean, he's still, you know, probably the best coach in Tennessee basketball history in terms of, you know, his achievements in the NCAA tournament, his consistency, all that. But, you know, Rick's been knocking on the door of a Final Four for a while now. At Tennessee, and I think this is a team that can get there, but got to solve the Kentucky riddle first, and they haven't been able to do that this season.
Do you have a theory of why?
Not really, no. I don't. You know, and you know, I think Kentucky fans, and I've heard from some of them, like, they're nervous about this matchup because of the whole cliche, it's hard to beat a team three times. I don't know how much I buy into that. Like, I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's any harder for Kentucky to beat Tennessee this time because they're 2-0 than if they would have lost the second matchup. You know, I think really these are two fairly equally matched teams. I think Tennessee on its best days a little bit better, didn't have its best day, you know, the two previous goes against Kentucky. You know, I mean, Chaz Lanier did not shoot it well, as I recall, from three-point range in
and
either of those games.
Also, in the first game, in the game in Knoxville, my boy Zakai was god-awful.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And three.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Lanier's been hot this tournament. I've said kind of all along, like, if Tennessee's going to get to the Final Four, they have to be a little bit more than just defense, I think. They have to be defense, and Lanier's got to be hot. And he has been through two rounds. If he stays hot, yeah, I think they can get to a Final Four. If he goes cold tonight, then I guess I sort of favor Kentucky.
What stood out more, Alabama's performance or the way the Arkansas game ended?
Probably the way the Arkansas game ended. Yeah, the whole time in the second half I was watching it, though, and I'm like, this thing's not over, because I felt like the better team was losing the entire time. Whereas, like, the spread, you know, the way the Duke game played out, it was kind of humming along a little more slowly. And so they were, on the clock, they were about equal.
Yeah, they basically, because that Duke game, they had, like, I think I looked it up, like 8,000 fouls. That game, like, the Arkansas game, because it went to overtime, lasted longer. But they had basically caught up after starting, what, 30 minutes later or something like that?
Totally.
They had caught up with, like, I don't know, 6 minutes left, 5 minutes left.
Totally. And so, like, at one point there was like 10 minutes to go in the second half, and in both games basically, and the score was about a 15-point spread or thereabouts in each of them, and I thought to myself, one of these games is over, one of them is not.
Yes.
Like, it felt like Duke, you know, I mean, they were just waiting to put the nail in the coffin, and it's like they're not going to squander this. But with Texas Tech, like, I mean, they were shooting terrible in the first half. Some of that's a credit to Arkansas. They got a pretty good defense. But, yeah, they're the last 10 minutes. I thought Arkansas started taking some bad shots. Texas Tech wasn't settling for the three. They were getting to the rim. And I mean, they shook off the cold start a little bit. I mean, I think Texas Tech's a dangerous team. I was surprised they buried themselves in a 15, 16 point hole like they did. I mean, you know, for the Calipari haters, it's easy criticism. He squandered, what was it, a 16 point lead in the second half? I mean, that's easy pickings there.
I mean, overall, everyone does the six. I think it was 16 with 10, but really, it's 10. What was it? 13 with 4.5 to go.
Yeah,
it was 69-56 after a Nellie Davis bucket with 4:43 to go.
That's the number. But like, Maybe this is a hot take, and I know it's like, I'm just saying, I'm very well versed in Cal meltdowns. I don't even think this cracks the top five for me. Like, what is the one? Like, can someone point to like the one? Like, kid misses the front end of the 1-1. Like, how is that Cal's fault? I don't have a problem with not calling timeout because they didn't have their defense set. And I also thought with like 15 seconds, that's too early to foul for the three. Like, you know what I mean? And also, like, You really trust the free throw shooting down the stretch?
Well, I think and sorry, Blake, to jump in, but I think that's kind of an interesting discussion because Arizona fouled
against Oregon.
But they made all their free throws.
Well, they have an all-time free throw shooter.
Right. Arkansas is not a very good free throw shooting team. So, look, I am a big proponent of fouling while you're up three, but I don't know. They had the ball with 20 seconds to go. I thought Texas Tech, I was like, man, they've completely screwed up this possession here. Like, they couldn't figure it out. It was taking forever, and then they just pull a three and they nail it, but...
It was good defense too.
Yeah, Darian Williams had a hand in his face. It was good defense.
Yeah, I totally agree with you guys. It was too early to foul. You know, there were 10 seconds left after that three goes through, right? Like, I mean, Arkansas has a look to win the game because Texas Tech tied it so quickly. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, if you're a Cal hater. Great. Go ahead and say he blew a 16-point lead. Factually, that's
true.
Accurate. I think, to your guys' point, though, like, I can't look at any individual thing, any individual coaching decision and say, boy, he really blew it there. Like, no, his guys on the floor just failed to close, and that's not a bailout for Cal. Like, I mean, again, I'm not going to pat him on the back for getting a Sweet 16 and then blowing a 16-point lead, but also – I'm not going to bury him for it either. Like, I feel like this first season at Arkansas, it met the bar. I don't think it exceeded the bar. It exceeded what the bar might have been on January 1st or January 15th. But I think with this team that they assembled out of the portal, I mean, he got there, he had no roster, but then he assembled a pretty solid team out of the portal. He gets the Sweet 16. I mean, if you just look at it from that lens, like, I think he met the bar. Didn't come in below the bar, didn't exceed the bar. Looking at this group, this was a team that should have made the Sweet 16. I think it'll be shoulda, woulda, coulda, based on that 16-point lead. But I don't look at that loss being on Calipari's stupid coaching decisions because I didn't see any in the last few minutes.
Yeah, I'm with you in the sense of, okay, I'm not going to give you credit for also overcoming obstacles that you created for yourself, which was stumbling out of the gates. But if you would have said before the season – Cal's going to put together a roster, and they're going to get to the Sweet 16. I would have said that's a good, solid year one.
Totally. And the same way with Kentucky. I mean, 100%. Normally, you know, it's normally Sweet 16 at Kentucky, they're probably a little underwhelmed by it. But considering the circumstances, some of the top talent followed Calipari out the door. Mark Pope had to build this thing out of the transfer portal.
And late.
For them getting the Sweet 16 – I think anything on top of this is gravy, right? And if they blow a 16-point lead tonight, Kentucky fans are going to be frustrated. But if you take back and take a step back and look at it holistically, I think Sweet 16 for both these guys meets the bar. If Pope wins tonight and gets to an Elite Eight, then I think I say in an Elite Eight in year one, considering the circumstances, that would exceed the bar.
Blake, it feels like we're not talking about Auburn a ton right now because they struggled down the stretch, 3 out of 4 losses.
Let's be real. I mean, right? It's eye test, right?
Yeah, played with their food against Alabama State. I feel like I'm a little bit in the minority. I thought the second half was encouraging to come back from down 2, outscore Creighton by 14. I thought Creighton was playing very, very well. So what do you make of this one tonight in Atlanta, Auburn and Michigan? Point spreads 8.5, 9. Look, Jeffrey knows it. Michigan owns occupancy in my head. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is a very good – they're a good basketball team. I think they're a bit overrated. I think they've been lucky at times this year. Did Auburn wake up in the second half against Creighton, and are we going to see January Auburn at any time soon?
I don't think we're going to see January Auburn, but going into the tournament on my podcast, I picked Michigan to make the Final Four because I was so concerned about that second round matchup for Auburn, whether it was Louisville playing them in Kentucky or playing a pretty seasoned Creighton team with an awesome big man and Ryan Kalkbrenner on Jahni Broome. I was really nervous about that second round game for Auburn. Now that they got through that, I mean, here's Michigan, my pick for the Final Four before the tournament tipped off. I could just stay with them, but I find myself flipping to Auburn, not necessarily because I think they're going to find their January form, but because they survived that second round game, I think they can, you know, this is a similar caliber opponent. I mean, the seeding's different, but I put Michigan sort of in the same bucket as I put Creighton in. I do think it's a tough matchup for Auburn. I mean, you're going to be throwing a lot of inches at Jahni Broome from that Michigan front court. Danny Wolfe, the Yale transfer, 7'1". Vlad Golden, the FAU transfer, who was on that Final Four team, he's 6'10". I mean, essentially Michigan starts two centers that they can throw at Auburn's front court. So this is, for me, probably the spiciest matchup of the evening. I mean, you know, Tennessee-Kentucky, pretty interested by two. That's a coin flip game. If Kentucky wins, I guess it's an upset by seeding. I don't count that as an upset. I guess in terms of upset potential, not that it would be a huge upset, but, you know, putting the Tennessee-Kentucky game aside, looking at the three other games, I guess I look at this one as maybe having the biggest upset potential. Although I think Ole Miss could spring one on Sparty too. I mean, that's far from a sure thing for Michigan State as well. I mean, really up and down. I'm looking forward to four good games. I was a little nervous last night that they were all going to be blowouts, and then we kind of backdoored our way into two pretty good ones in the night session, particularly the overtime finish there with Texas Tech. And I don't know. I'm kind of hoping for maybe three out of four good ones again tonight.
I know he didn't win, but I swear to God, if Chris Beard wins this game tonight, in my opinion, he should have been coach of the year, because I still don't think that Ole Miss roster is very good.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You're talking about in the SEC?
Yeah.
In the SEC. Yeah, I think
that's I know we handed out at the end of the regular season. You know what I mean? But right. To me, it's just like, if you're asking what do I think was the most impressive coaching job, that would be it.
If he wins tonight, yeah, I think so. I think that's right. And also, kudos to Ole Miss for not having to replace him, right? I mean, I think...
Maryland!
It's gonna be coming open here.
You putting any stock to the rumors that Rick might be retiring?
Well, okay.
You know who else used to coach at Texas?
Guys, don't do this to me, please.
And I feel bad. Like, my whole family's Ole Miss people, but it's like, y'all, this is what I'm hearing. I'm not making it up. I'm not, like, fantasy booking. I'm not fantasy booking
say,
your pain.
If I'm Maryland, the first call I make is Chris Beard, and I make him say no. I don't know if that's who's on their list. I know they're still trying to figure it out with Kevin Willard. I think that ship has sailed based off of everything.
Based on what?
Based off of everything. I know Buzz Williams apparently wants out of Texas A&M, but if I'm Maryland, my first call is Beard.
And historically, that's a better job, right?
Yes, but
right now, is it a big enough step up for him to leave?
Would Ole Miss let their basketball program stay an extra day in New York City? I think that's
yes.
The bar, you know?
Yes, because Ole Miss's athletic director was a former shooting guard for the basketball program, and like it's a lot of sweat equity.
Yeah.
And my understanding is Chris Beard might get told no less than Lane Kiffin does.
And probably for good reason, quite frankly. I wouldn't bring down the mood, but
It's unbelievable.
You're saying in the athletic department. I thought you were saying from other athletic directors.
No. In the athletic department, I think Chris might get told no less than Lane does.
I think that's fair, and I think he might get told no from potential schools that might otherwise have interest.
Yes.
In him, if not for the elephant in the room, and we don't have to go down that road. But I think anybody listening probably knows what the elephant in the room is. So. I don't think it's as simple as looking at Chris Beard's record and being like, yep, good coach, let's hire him. I do think if Indiana would have wanted him, that man would have had his bags packed, the key in the ignition, the car ready. As soon as they would have bid adieu in the NCAA tournament, he's halfway down the road to Hoosier land. Some of these other shops, I don't know, is he halfway down the road to Maryland versus Ole Miss? Again, historically, I guess you'd say yes. In this particular moment, SEC is looking like the best conference in the land right now, and Ole Miss is right in the thick of things. So, I don't know if that's a big enough step up for him to pack the bags in the way that I think he would have for Indiana if Indiana wanted to go down that road.
I also think schools are overthinking this. Ole Miss took the heat, and what, five national columnists I think wrote about it for one day.
I wrote about it for multiple days, but yeah. Sure, yeah.
That's true. No, but I give you credit.
No, that's fair.
I think Ole Miss has taken the heat off everybody.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. They have. You can now be the second one to hire him and say, "Hey, Ole Miss did it. What's the difference?"
You know,
I mean, you now got more runway in between you. I don't think all of us. I mean, there really weren't many people writing about it. I think you probably oversold it, saying five of us were writing about it when Ole Miss did it. Like, I think there was for the most part, there was sort of a collective shrug by folks in the national media, because it's like, it's Ole Miss basketball. Who cares?
They were the worst program in the SEC. Like, this is what my old boss wrote at the time, which was, what's the worst that's going to happen? You're gonna fall from worst? Like, you're the worst program. Like, why not?
From a basketball perspective. Yeah. There was nowhere to go but up. From a basketball perspective, there was no downside in hiring Chris Beard for Ole Miss. And like, look, I mean, at the end of the day, the number of athletic directors and presidents that let their moral code, I guess, influence them on hiring, I think it's fewer than it used to be.
I agree.
It worked out for Ole Miss. He's colored inside the lines. He's got the basketball program in the Sweet 16, and there would be some other athletic director out there who would say, I don't have any problem with Chris Beard, and Ole Miss took the heat, so let's do it. I just think, I don't know. I guess I'd be curious to see what would be the